Hi everybody, you're listening to your friends Lauren James and Ed Biggs broadcasting from LGM Towers. This week we're bringing you some of the highlights of the world of pop and indie music. We were scheduled to bring in Matt Langham for this podcast, but he's done something unfortunate to his shoulder playing football, so he's unable to join us, unfortunately. We, however, do hope to bring you his insights into the next couple of episodes. So if you just, have to make do with us again.
I think he'll be in the episode after the next one, because the next one he's going to be in London watching his beloved Hull
City. I
don't
even know why we mentioned him. I don't think our listeners believe he exists.
Slightly harsh. Anyway.
Well, we'll be listening to a couple of new tracks by Kasabian and the Manic Street Preachers ahead of their respective albums coming out in the next couple of months. Exciting times, hey Ed. Mm-hmm. We'll be reviewing the new albums released by Pixies and Damon Albarn in a bit of depth before talking briefly about the new albums by Embrace and Eels. And finally, we'll be analysing The Cure's 1989 masterpiece, Disintegration, released 25 years ago, as well as Weezer's self-titled debut. The record commonly referred to as the Blue Album on account of its blue cover, which will turn 20 on May the 8th.
Well, as opposed to the green album and the red album.
Yeah, aka it's time to feel old.
Three self-titled albums in their career.
If, in the meantime, you can also visit our website for more reviews, including Khalees, The OCs, White Oak and Iggy Azalea, and also The Vamps' absolutely terrible record.
First of all, we need to talk about what we did at Live at Leeds.
Yes, for if you're listening to this anywhere else in the world, probably but Yorkshire, you will not know what on earth we're on about. But Live at Leeds was pretty important.
I don't know, it gets around the word of this.
Ish. It's the most very UK-centric thing, isn't it? Anyway, it's the annual festival that we are still recovering from. You pay a set fee, you get a wristband, and you go to any of the participating venues in the city. We saw over, well, we didn't see, but we had access to over 200 bands and artists. So we're not that good at reviewing things.
Oh yeah, there's more new up and coming acts in one day than you can possibly hope to see in a year, basically.
Okay, and
you can check out our website laserguidedmelodies.co.uk to check out what we did on the day. The highlights included Apollo Junction at the Pack Horse, Los Campesinos at the Refectory, Courtney Barnett, Royal Blood. But the thing that we all saw was F Buttons.
Beep!
Yeah. They were incredible, weren't they?
Yes. Yes, they were. Instrumental dance act, I'd say. A lot of it, just a layered electronic. I remember I read a review of Boop Buttons that went...
let's just call them F Buttons, just so that we don't
people get the gist. Yeah. The review was something like, their music starts off like the sun rising above the ocean that suddenly turns into a supernova. That's quite apt.
Well, I describe it more like Underworld played by a metal act.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a metal rhythm there, but what struck me most was the link between how tribal a lot of the pulse of the music was, juxtaposed with the modern instruments.
Bringing juxtaposed, are we?
Yep. English A-level. Juxtaposed with how modern the instruments that they use are. And so there was something about the music that taps into something ancient in all of us, but at the same time, wowing us with layers upon layers of fuzzy, bassy, dramatic vibrations.
I know, just what struck me each time, that they bring in the beat, but the bass wouldn't be sort of fully primed and up yet, and about 2 minutes into the song, they'd hit you with the bass, and it actually just made you stand backwards a bit. It would just hit you in the chest. Yeah. It was extraordinary, and the guy dancing down the front for the entire thing, I think he probably enjoyed it. If you're listening, guy dancing at the front out there, you were amazing.
Yeah. I almost wish it had been less loud, because the loudness meant that I couldn't have enjoyed it without earplugs, which, because of the cheap foam earplugs we were using rather than the posh ones that make it all adjusted, it meant that a lot was taken away from the music. Definitely sounded different to with the earplugs, without the earplugs. And it wasn't it was quiet.
I disagree. I think the volume is everything about them. They're in a long line of, a lineage of acts that use extreme noise as a force for good in their music, like Jesus and Mary Chain and
Nah, I don't buy into that. I don't think
sleigh bells.
Loudness should be an aspect of a band's music. You know, any band can be loud, you just crank it up. You know, it just seems lazy for me. I know.
Yeah, but there's an it takes a lot of talent to make that sound artful.
You just turn it up, basically.
I've seen loads of bands like The Enemy and the Cortinas who are just loud but to no end.
They're a kettle of fish though.
Yeah. Anyway, you can read what Matt Langham and Lauren James and I did that day on our website. And it was amazing.
Yes.
F-buttons were amazing. So, new tracks now. Mm-hmm. Lauren, what have we got first?
Well, Kasabian have announced the title of their new record, which will be released on June the 16th, so a couple of months away yet.
Yeah.
It's going to be called 4813. And no, it's not a Bible reference.
Although if you type that into Google, you do get a Bible
exactly.
Translation.
Yeah, maybe there's like something subversive there. But apparently it's so titled because that's the album's length in minutes. So obviously they dedicated quite a lot of time to naming this one. They also unleashed the first single to be taken from it. The rather, I'm going to say interesting, Ease Air. Go and look up the spelling of that if you're confused about how I just pronounced
it. It's E-E-Z-E-R.
Whilst you're looking it up, you can listen to this clip. There by Kasabian, and most of all, let's just talk about how very un-Kasabian that was.
Yeah, it's kind of when I first heard it, I thought it's like what the hell is this? But if you go back to their second album Empire, there's a song on it called Stuntman, and this sounds like that. So they have got a bit of form with sounding like this. It sounds like 90s big beat music, like Chemical Brothers, but obviously with some rock vocals. And about four listens in, it's begun to grow on me.
Yeah, I'd say it was a grower.
But the fact that they called it Ease Air is such like a, it's potentially a really clever move, because so many people have accused them of being a football hooligans band, and to call your song Ease Air when so many football fans go Ease Air, Ease Air,
Is that where it's from?
I think they've done that just to kind of divide opinion and just make people assume things about it that aren't true. Particularly when you couple it with the fact that they've come out in support of the Glastonbury ban on World Cup football, then they're basically trying to retool people's conceptions about them. I think that's to be applauded. It's certainly a pretty different sound to what Kasabian are renowned for. I think this will turn out to be one of the tracks of the year. Once you get over the initial ridiculousness.
Strong words there. I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. So on next.
Manic Street Preachers have also announced that the new album Futurology will be coming out on the 7th of July. Futurology debuted its first single, Walk Me to the Bridge. And here's a clip of it. Need the poor, killed like an animal lying on the floor. Killed like an animal lying on the floor. Walk Me to the Bridge there by Manic Street Preachers from their upcoming album Futurology. The Preachers, the back.
Yes, and they've plugged their electric guitars back in. after Rewind the Film last year, which is mostly a folk album, they've come back in very short order with an album which they said in the past is going to be sort of spikier, I think was Nicky Wire's phrase. This didn't sound particularly spiky to me. This sounded like Simple Minds. You know, they've tried to make an 80s stadium rocker.
That's what sells, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
To their target audience.
I don't think so. It doesn't sound like... Basically, when Nicky Wire says spikier, you're kind of thinking something along the lines of the Holy Bible or Journal for Plague Lovers. But this sounded more like Lifeblood to me, which is their notoriously flat 2004 record, which it kind of saw them have a big dip in sales, particularly amongst neutral fans.
So would you say that Futurology is going to go the same way?
who can tell? This song, it didn't really do it for me though. So I'm disappointed by it because I'm a massive fan of Manic Street Preachers and of their singles, which are their best bit.
This year? I think they're at Glastonbury.
I think they are, yeah. But not headlining. They've kind of fallen a bit from that kind of world beating status that they were at at the end of the 90s.
It'll be interesting seeing them debut all these new songs because Glastonbury is, of course, the week before the release of this album. So yeah. That'll be the.
Couple of weeks before, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
End of June, isn't it? And it'll be interesting to see how it's received by fans. Saying this, we're going to be watching it for the television coverage because neither of us have got tickets this year.
Oh, God, then. So on to our albums for this fortnight. It's been a while since you've heard from us last, so you would expect us to be in 3 weeks' worth of albums, but actually we're kind of playing catch-up for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, right,
and then we'll be talking about the albums that we should be doing this week, next week, if you know what I mean.
The music.
Yeah. So, Lauren, what have we got first?
Pixies have returned with their first album in 23 years. Wow, that's half Ed's age.
Hang on, I'm not 46. You weren't even alive the last time they released an album.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one, new one's called Indie Cindy.
Terrible title.
It's quite catchy. It's going to be remembered, isn't it?
Terrible title.
And here's a clip of Greens and Blues. Sure. By the Pixie Wixies from their new album Cindy Windy. No, Indie Cindy. Windy Cindy.
Windy Cindy.
Did you say Windy Cindy?
You said Cindy Windy.
Do I need to get the rant bell out, or was it quite good?
Well, it's a bit of a rant bell, this one. So basically, Pixies are back after 23 years. They've been doing their Reformation tour for what seems like forever. I mean, they actually reformed back in 2004, but it get to 2014 before we actually get any new material from them. Little bit of background to start with. Kim Deal, their legendary and iconic female bassist, she got kicked out halfway through the recording sessions for this. She was replaced by Simon Archer in the studio, but in the live version of the Pixies she was replaced by Kim Shattuck and then Paz Lynchantin. This kind of reflects an instability in Pixies, which does come across a little bit in this record, because it's not quite sure about what kind of Pixies it wants to be. It wants to be halfway between Doolittle and Bossa Nova, but put all together, this album is unacceptably uninspired. If you hold it up against records like Surfer Rosa and of Doolittle, which we did an anniversary piece on about a month ago, didn't we?
Yes.
The lack of creativity on the record is bordering on outrageous. There is absolutely nothing on this record that even suggests that Pixies might once long ago have been a tremendously influential and important group, which is what they were. And that is the real problem with Indie Cindy. In normal circumstances, I would have given this album 5 out of 10, but because it's Pixies and because we do rightly expect so, so much more from them, it's got 3.
Ooh.
It really does feel
that's
like
no
a betrayal.
And 3.
But it's more than that. People who want a new Stone Roses album ought to be very careful of what they wish for, because Indie Cindy is what can happen after such a long amount of time. This isn't like My Bloody Valentine with MBV last year, and that took 22 years to make. But Kevin Shields was actually working on that for 22 years. He never went on hiatus. He was just perfecting it. He was trying to bring a sound that he heard in his head to life. Indie Cindy is not like that. It feels like an afterthought. It is at best the sound of a band becoming a brand, and at worst it's the sound of a once legendary group desecrating their legacy. That's my take. Lauren, what did you think?
Thought it was alright.
The song you heard there, Greens and Blues, was by far and away the best one on the album, and it was nice. You could whistle along to it, but that's about it. There were some songs in there that were just such aimless bluster to them.
Bluster.
He sounds like he's trying to wrestle himself out of a straitjacket. It's just noise to no end.
See, I know which song you're on about, and I actually enjoyed that one.
What Goes Boom?
Yes, that's right. For me, it was a good bridge between the alt rock and the hard rock, almost metal. There was some riffing on there, and I know you didn't like it, but for me, that made me think, yeah, I'm going to revisit this. I actually enjoyed that.
Well, fair enough. I'm glad someone did.
Yeah, I mean, it's currently just that song, really.
It's currently sitting at number 6 in the chart, so and that's their biggest, their highest chart position ever in this country.
It's their legacy.
It's their legacy. But the problem is that a lot of kids who weren't around at the time are now going to pick this record up and think, hang on, what's the big deal with this lot? Why were they so important? That's the problem.
Big question though, does it matter?
Please go out and buy Doolittle.
Does it though?
I think it does matter, because Surfer Rosa and Doolittle, they practically invented Nirvana, who were one of the biggest sort of pop cultural movements of the last 25 years. And you know that begat Britpop, the British counter swing to all that.
Mm.
Right, so what have we got next?
Damon Albarn released a solo album this week called Everyday Robots, a review of which you can find on our website. But to start off with, before Ed possibly, I don't know, I'm looking in his eyes, some anger in there, not sure if it's just alcohol.
Enjoy the clip.
It'll be a silent day. I share with you. Fighting off.
Well, that was Hostile, which
Hostiles.
Is hopefully not what Ed is feeling towards that track.
No, well, I'd like to clear up a misconception which Lauren might put across. I am not somebody who needs alcohol to rant and talk about albums.
It just helps.
Yeah, it does,
actually.
It
lubricates the fury. The gears of fury.
Okay, right. Fair enough. Anyway.
Looking sheepish.
So, Damon Albarn, outside of his work with Blur, has been extremely busy. He's put his name to more projects outside of Blur now than he ever did for them. You count 3 albums with Gorillaz, 1 as The Good, the Bad and the Queen, 1 as Rocket Juice and the Moon, the scores for Monkey Journey to the West and for Dr. D, the Marley Music / Africa Express project. He's done more projects... not as Blur than he did as Blur. So perhaps it's time we start to think of him more as a solo artist. Think of him as Damon Albarn, an artist, rather than Damon Albarn, the guy who sang with Blur.
Mm. There's an essence of Jack White to his trajectory so far.
But this, crucially, is the first time outside of a shonky record about 12 years ago called Demo Crazy, which was terrible, that he's actually put his name to alone. It's just Damon Albarn. So it's it actually is a solo record. It's not just Damon Albarn doing something not Blur. But this album called Everyday Robots is a peculiarly British melting pot of influences. It's primarily dominated by sort of percussion loops and found sound, which reflects a theme of the record, which is what's going to become of human interaction in an atomized society governed increasingly by automated processes. It seems like a very sad and demure kind of album, doesn't it? It sounds very modest.
Yeah, to me, I haven't listened to it as many times as you. I've probably listened to it twice. To me, it just felt like what would have happened if Sweet Song had been turned into a full album.
Yeah, I get that. It's but he is quite hopeful and quietly optimistic, I think. A Guardian review of this said they couldn't decide whether it was a sad man trying to make a happy album or a happy man trying to make a sad album. I think it sounds what Ray Davis would sound like if he was recording now rather than 50 years ago.
Interesting.
It's quite similar to Think Tank or The Good, the Bad and the Queen, I think. I'm kind of interested to see how he's going to bring this album to life in front of a headline festival crowd at Latitude later on this summer. It's currently sitting at number 2 in the charts, which is quite impressive, I think. It outsold new records by Embrace and Pixies.
It shows you the respect for Albarn's career.
Yeah. I suspect it won't hang around at number 2 for very long. I think most people who were going to buy it have bought it already. But I think it's a very impressive placing for such a technical record that does require quite a bit of effort on your part to listen to. There's a song in it called Mr. Tembo, which was the fourth track, which actually used a ukulele without sounding, you know, cheesy and terrible.
Well, it sounded less cheesy and terrible than most songs with a ukulele in it.
Yeah, the ukulele is, if you're unaware, the most abused instrument of the last 5 years. but the musicians he's pulled in to record this use it well. But it's the only upbeat moment on quite a... It's a melancholic album in the tradition of Blur songs like This Is A Low, and like you said, Lawrence, Sweet Song, and songs from Think Tank.
The softer side explored.
So I was really impressed with this record. I really like it. It's probably going to be in the top 50 of the year when it comes to it. 8 out of 10. So next, we've got the new record by Embrace. They've kind of come back in from the wilderness for a second time. The first time since 2006, and it's just called Embrace. Have you heard anything from this, Lauren? I know we haven't got any clips this time for this.
No, tell me about it, please. No.
Well, actually, Matthew reviewed this one. You know what your typical Embrace song sounds like? It sounds like, you know, triumphalist, anthemic, you know, trying to get, you know, get the big men crying, basically.
The early noughties.
Yeah. This is in my opinion, a really badly advised attempt at reinventing their sound. They've brought some dance elements into it, and this would work if it weren't for Danny McNamara's voice. And as a closet Embrace fan, I have to say, because I did really like them in the late 90s, this really doesn't make sense at all. I mean, their first retirement, let's say, was brought on by declining sales. That's totally understandable. But when Chris Martin from Coldplay resurrected their career by donating Gravity to them back in 2004, it was pretty much a miraculous revival. I went to one of their reunion gigs in 2004, and it was just like one of the biggest love-ins I've ever seen in my life. and then they made that World Cup song called World at Your Feet in 2006. They released This New Day, and it was, I think, their biggest selling album. And their disappearance since then, it's completely unexplainable, because they kind of bowed out at a high. And 8 years later, you have to wonder, have they kind of squandered the goodwill? I think to some extent that's true, but it must still be out there because it's currently at number 5 in the chart. And it's an okay album, but it really doesn't sound like a very well-advised project to me.
American indie icon Mark Everett, under his long recording moniker Eels, has returned with an 11th album of typically personal and raw music called The Cautionary Tales of Mark Oliver Everett. Some people get Eels, some people really, really don't get Eels. I think I'm just about get them enough to enjoy his music. I remember hearing an interview with him this week where he said he was talking about his new album, and he was asked whether all the women that he dates, whether they date him just so that they can break up with him and he'll write a song about them. And it blew his mind. It was hilarious.
That's so sad.
I know. And he said, wow, I need to rethink my whole career, or something to that effect.
Quite
so that pretty much sums up
case.
The Eels.
Yeah, it's... Well, Eels is basically kind of an ongoing pop project / ongoing personal saga revolving around just Mark Oliver Everett. Kind of like Marquis Smith and The Fall, just like an elastic number of musicians all around one nucleus. For those who can't remember them, they were at their biggest in the mid to late 90s. They had an album called Electroshock Blues, which was amazing and sold a lot of records. But their output has been rather varied throughout the noughties. I mean, between 2009 and 2010, they released 3 albums in 2 years, none of which were any good. Oh. There was a distinct lack of quality control. But then they made an album called Wonderful Glorious last year, which I reviewed for the, I think, is a now defunct Lead Student Music paper. But this album, their 11th, it kind of rehabilitates them further. The title says it all, really. The Cautionary Tales of Mark Oliver Everett. It's like reading an old diary full of breakups and regrets and things that seemed significant at the time but actually aren't anymore looking back at them. It's very stripped back and personal and revealing. It's kind of like an American version of Nick Drake. It's easily his best album since Blinking Lights and Other Revelations back in 2005. And if you know quite a lot about the Eels, it's probably as good as Electroshock Blues, I'd say.
Wow.
It's a very surprising rehabilitation for him. It reached number 7 in the charts here, which is quite surprising, considering he's been very much sort off
impressive.
The radar.
Yeah, he always seems like he's skirting around the mainstream, never quite enters it, skimming from one edge to the other.
I mean, I've never been that much of a fan of a lot of his work. He can seem quite trite at times, but this one he seems very direct without being really, really obvious.
Mm.
I mean, he's quite misunderstood, an icon, basically. I don't like him that much, but there are a lot of people out there who do, and they've responded to this new record. It's one of his bestsellers in years. So now I'm on to our album anniversary.
Anniversaries. On May the 2nd, The Cure's 8th album, Disintegration, turned 25. You're about to listen to clips of its 3 tracks, opening track Plain Song, its top 5 UK single Lullaby, and title track Disintegration. You enjoyed that. That was Plain Song, Lullaby, and Disintegration from The Cure's 8th album, Disintegration, which has turned 25 recently.
Yeah, so The Cure are probably one of the best singles bands this country has ever produced, I think. I think if you get hold of their greatest hits collection in 2001, I don't think you could ever find a greater concentration of like 5-star songs ever. Well, I've had that album ever since it came out, but I haven't really started to collect Cure albums until quite recently. Disintegration is generally held to be their best among their fans, and it still is their biggest selling album worldwide, with I think just a shade over 3 million copies sold.
Wow.
They're commonly pigeonholed as goth, but I always think they've got more crossover appeal than that, because they've always had songs like In Between Days and Friday I'm in Love, but Disintegration is a bit more back to basics. I mean, when he started recording this, it was just after the 1987 album called Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, which had Just Like Heaven on it, and it finally broke them in America. But approaching his 30th birthday, Robert Smith, the lead singer, thought he had to make something that was a bit more resonant before his, you know, before his 30th birthday, which is he kind of felt that he was going to become redundant after that. So what you get is like a return to like the darkness of their 1982 album Pornography. It's also got quite a lot of that pop sensibility still built into it. It feels like sort of the accumulation, the apex of a lot of tendencies that have been going on in their career up until that point. And certainly from this point on, they tended to suffer from sort of over-ambitiousness or trying to strip their sound back too much. So basically, they were never as good as this, in my opinion. So I think probably quite a lot of fans think this as well. But what do you think? I mean, one of the singles from it, called Love Song, is... was covered by Adele on 21, and so it's now reached an audience that even The Cure couldn't possibly have hoped to have got to. So if you're unfamiliar with The Cure, you will at least have heard that song, probably. So so while there's nothing on it that's quite got like the joyful melodic punch of In Between Days or Just Like Heaven, it does feel like a career statement, a definitive statement from, I think, one of the most popular rock institutions this country's ever produced, I think.
Yeah.
I mean...
yeah.
Yeah.
Robert Smith's an icon.
Yeah.
To this day, there's no doubt about it.
It's certainly the darkest and most ornate Cure album that you can get your hands on. And Robert Smith himself says that this is one of three albums that he feels sort of defined The Cure the best, like his self-styled Cure trilogy, the first of which is Pornography in 1982, the second one of this one, obviously, and the third one is Blood Flowers from 2000, which is very difficult to listen to. It's almost crushingly heavy. And we've got one more album anniversary for you. Here's Lauren to tell you about it.
Finally, we've got Weezer's terrific debut that's about to turn 20. Here's a clip of the opening track, My Name is Jonas. We've all left the Denman tight by a choo-choo train left by on time. A ticket costs only your mind. Driver said, hey man, we go all the way. Of course we were willing to pay.
Okay, so you've just been listening to the opening track from Weezer's self-titled debut in 1994, otherwise known as the Blue Album, called My Name is Jonas.
Excellent album.
Lauren, why is this album so brilliant?
Well, as a debut, it was very rounded. For me, it's a collection of stories. Rivers and the gang are...
Rivers Cuomo, the lead singer.
Yes, they embody a collection of personas. Each one's different, you know. Is it the old man looking back at his life, the jaded worker, the reclusive nerd? You know, all of these can be found on the Blue Album, and that's what's so interesting about it. You know, they were before, they're quite arrogant in their sound now, and they're doing sort of loads of rock and roll antics, like hosting parties on cruise ships and all these things, but back then they were just
A damn good band.
Yeah, they were the voice of the nerd, really. People who didn't quite feel at home in society. It's almost like a soundtrack to the disillusionment of high school days, especially in America. A good, solid rock album. Lots of sad moments, lots of uplifting and joyous moments, anthemic choruses.
I think it's that last song called Only in Dreams that sort of sums up for me. That's the moment that it, you know, a good album becomes a really, really great one.
Mm.
I think it lasts 8 minutes and it's one of the most just lovely rock songs I've ever listened to.
I don't know. It is a great song, but it could have happily been left off the album for me because all the other songs on the record are so self-assured, so different, and they were fresh sounding at the time.
I think it leans into kind of self-parody at sometimes, like particularly one about, you know, you take your car and I'll take my board. Track number 6.
Take your car to work.
Yeah, and the one about the one called In the Garage as well. But you know, who am I to criticise it? It's still one of the most popular albums ever. I mean, if you look at it on Metacritic, literally nobody has got a bad word to say about it. I think it holds a Metacritic score of something like 94.
Wow.
And its follow-up, Pinkerton, is one of the very few albums that has 100 on that. And that will be celebrating its 20th anniversary next year. So we'll get to talk about Weezer all over again. But I love that album because it's got Buddy Holly on it.
Yeah.
It's got Say It Ain't So. It's got the Sweater song. It's got that song My Name is Jonas. I think you summed it up. It is just a really, really perfect pop rock song.
Yeah, you're right.
Only in Dreams just caps it off for me. That it turns that album from being an 8 out of 10 album to a 9 out of 10 album. Yeah.
On that note.
So well, before we get lost in nostalgia here, we're probably going to go and listen to it right
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm.
So Lauren will be writing a full piece article about it, and we'll get to hear more about how much she loves it.
Stay tuned. In less than 2 weeks' time, we'll return with episode 10 in the capable hands of us both.
Matthew won't be here, obviously. Yeah.
We'll be raking over any significant music news and new tracks, and we'll be reviewing new records going to have a lot to choose from. As a, you know, the cream of the crop, we'll be looking at
an awful lot
the
of big
new
name records
Black
coming out.
Keys record Turn Blue, which is out on the 12th. The Horrors' fourth album, very exciting, Luminous, which is out now. And there will also be new records by Lily Allen, Chunyards, Leaky Lee, Gruff Rhys.
From Super Fairy Animals.
Yeah, Blondie, Little Dragon, Swans, and a collaboration record between the legendary producer Brian Eno and Underworld's lead singer Carl Hyde. If we're not talking about them next time, they will definitely be reviewed on our website, www.lesgalimedes.co.uk, which you must type into the address bar of your browser, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So we'll also be talking classic albums by The Streets and Beastie Boys.
So if you've enjoyed our merry banter and you'd like to join in the conversation, you can like us on Facebook at Laser Guided Melodies and be our friend forever.
Do you think you'd make a better jester or a town crier? I haven't decided yet.
Depends how much drink I've had. You can find us on Tumblr by searching for the same thing, or you can find us on Twitter by searching for @LGMelodies.
See you there.
Goodbye.
See ya.